Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett and today we are talking the overachievers, those players we picked up either late in the draft, out of the pool, and they exceeded our expectations of what they actually scored throughout the year. And as always, to help us with that is Stevie Fizz. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing great, and I guess this pod's basically about me because, you know, let's be honest, people think I'm great, and then I come in and over exceed everyone's expectations, time in, time out. Like the weather today in Melbourne, geez, it was a corker of a day. So, g'day, listeners, and hope you're doing as good as I am.
And here's Dan in Tassie, sitting on his couch. We welcome to you, the Statesman. How you doing?
Hello, listeners. I will do a bit of a Jerry Seinfeld and say, what's the deal with? Most people probably got an understanding that I have a very busy work life, have a very busy career, and this is my first weekend off in something like 6 or 7 months, and I keep getting told by Mrs. Statesman that I work too hard and need to relax, I need to rest and unwind. So my first weekend off, guess what happens? There's a long list of jobs that she requires me to do on my first weekend off. So I'm actually more tired than I would be if I actually had to work this weekend. But there you go. So what's the deal with the missus telling you to take a break, slow down, relax, enjoy yourself, and then the first time you get off is a long list of jobs to be done?
Well, did you tell her that Bathurst was on and that's more important?
I didn't even realise Bathurst was on. There you go. That's how busy I've been.
Wow. And you are a motor racing fan.
I am.
Very, very weird. And he doesn't understand the concept of time as he was running a bit late for this pod today. It is the third McLaughlin brother. Welcome to you, Cam.
Yeah, g'day, guys. I want to start with a bit of a strempling. And it's for exactly that reason, daylight savings as a concept and everyone that supports it, strempling. Been caught out twice in one day and I'm not going to have a bar of it going forward, and it's part of the reason why I moved to Melbourne in the first place.
You moved to Melbourne for daylight savings?
There were a number of reasons, probably three that I can remember, and that was top of the list.
That just...
Well, I don't even know how to respond.
No, it's not one of the reasons I'd be moving to Melbourne for. Daylight savings. Four other states, I think, that participate.
Do they have it in Queensland?
No, we don't have
it. Do they have it in Perth?
They have it in Perth. Yeah.
So just No, they don't have it in WA. And the reason why they don't is their curtains were going to fade.
All right.
Too much sun makes the curtains fade. I'm serious. That was one of the arguments I heard on Talkback Radio. The other one was about the cows. No, they did a trial. It'll be almost close to a decade now, but they did a 3-year trial in WA, and I thought it was magnificent. Of course, being used to it and grown up with it, but yeah, they didn't like it over there. Damn curtains, spending too much money on them.
Fair enough. Well, let's get into the show. We are talking those players that exceeded our expectations, unlike the Bachelor finale, which certainly exceeded our expectations of him actually picking no one. But, Steve, why don't you kick it off and see who you've got there for your first player?
Yeah, okay. So my first player I want to talk about as an overperformer last year is Dale Thomas. I thought Daisy really returned to fantasy relevance, playing 20 games, averaging 85 Dream Team and Supercoach, his best averages since 2012. He was up 14 Dream Team and 20 Supercoach points from his 2017 averages. And really, Sam Doherty's injury paved the way for this fantasy renaissance, if you will, with Dale Thomas moving into a wing from a wing half forward role into a Sam Doherty style half back flank role, where he was just racking up plus sixes at will, averaging a career high 7 marks per game, which was good for equal 14th in the league, as we know defenders generally league lead the league in marks and disposal efficiency, which is always is one thing that grinds my gears when people are like, "Whoa, Stephen Gillam was the best kick in the league last year." I'm like, "No, he's just kicking to no one 20 metres away who's completely unmarked." Like, yes, defenders generally have a good disposal efficiency, believe it or not. But back on to Dale Thomas. He started as a forward, gained defender status in those fantasy leagues, and I just didn't see this coming. Didn't think he'd be the guy to benefit. I thought it'd be more your Caleb Marchbank, Lachie Plowman types, the Irishman, Kieran Byrne. Yeah, I think a lot of people sort of thought potentially Byrne and O'Shea were going to be the benefits. I didn't see O'Shea myself, but I know some people did. But it's just amazing the, you know, Dale Thomas really was the man to benefit from that.
I think it's crazy as well. Like, at the end of last year, I would have bet the house on this being Dale Thomas's last year. Because last year he wasn't very good, and there was talk about him being moved on. And then this year he's just come out and had an absolute flyer.
Yeah, and look, it makes sense because his strength has always been his uncontested game. He's always been a very good outside player. Even when he was at his fantasy best, he never actually averaged 10 contested possessions a game. And when we talk about score build quite often, but to get those 7 marks a game, you don't need to average 27 touches a game if you're getting 7 marks. You really only need 20-something. And Dale Thomas was certainly able to do that. I think the big question is, can he actually do it again? Because I think people will see the name, maybe see the average, and might be tempted to be sucked back into him. With Sam Doherty coming back, I think the big question is, do Carlton recruit another midfielder? I know there's been talk about Dylan Scheel, but if they don't get anyone, I see the possibility where Doherty plays as a midfielder and Dale Thomas stays loose across half back and maintains some fantasy relevance. So what are your thoughts, guys? I mean, I'm not projecting that, but I think it's a reasonable outcome.
I think you saw Doherty at the end of last season. I think 6 out of his last 8 games, he actually spent more time in the midfield than he did defence. And I think that's what they're grooming him up for. Now I would assume, like you suggested before, that the Marchbank was probably planned to be the Doherty role, to actually be that the swing and the loose, but that didn't seem to be the one that panned out this year. So I'll be interested to see what obviously happens with the trade period in the draft. But I think you're right. I don't see the future being Dale Thomas. I think there's a few older statesmen in that Carlton side that once these young kids actually start standing on their own 2 feet, that they're just sort of going to, their roles are going to decrease and maybe miss quite a few games as well. But certainly Dale Thomas will be one of those, you would think.
Yeah, I agree. But it's just, you know, the point's going to come where Carlton need to start winning games.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And Cam, who have you got there for your first player, mate?
So my first one for an overachiever, and I want to put it down to a bit of an analogy for you guys, if that's all right. And, you know, Ferris wheels, how it's sort of the same thing over and over and over again, regardless of where you go. It's you go up and you go round, you go down. And then you have those ones that are at carnivals and they may not get as much maintenance over time. And then over time, it just goes, there'll be one cart that goes fucking bang, psh, like, and just blasts off, and the people inside are injured and all that sort of stuff. And that, to me, this year was Shannon Hearn, where he's sort of done, since 2006, his debut season, he's gone roughly, in AFL fantasy terms, about 75 average, and that's been kind. His first few seasons were 40s, 50s, and similar. But then last year, and this year, he's produced between 80 and this year 86.6. And I wouldn't have seen it coming. The guy's 31 this year. He's about to be 32 next year, late next year. But for me, like, looking at his history, I expected him to just keep going around that Ferris wheel, you know, and not sort of escalate his average this late in his career. But it's come down to, I guess, a bit of a change in role. So he's playing a bit more of a free running defender, and it's seen his marks and corresponding kicks increase by 3 each per game on average. So that's 12 points without doing anything, you know, just there per game. So he's getting a significant boost in average from that. And, you know, to Steve's point before about Daisy and whether or not he can maintain it going on to next year, I can't see it. But, you know, I throw the question out to you guys, because for me, like, I wouldn't touch him because he's getting quite old. Like, 32 and running defender, I know that's where you can actually be a little bit older. When you've got people like Luke Hodge, you've got people like Cade Simpson, you've got people that are sort of on the grayer end of the youth scale. What do you reckon? Can he go around again, and can he improve on his 86?
In AFL fantasy, it's a maybe, but he's always been that scoring super coach due to the contested mark, intercepts from opposition. You get more points for that, obviously, but... 31. I can't see why not. I mean, they've got a pretty good back six down there where they share the load around. McGovern's that number one interceptor. You got Barras as well, Schofield, Shepherd, all taking better players. So he's not taking that first or second forward anymore. So he can peel off and play that Alex Rance type role, but score better. That's for me.
Yeah, I'll just touch on this. I actually had Shannon Hearn ranked pretty highly. I had him 15th, I think, coming into the season for Supercoach. He was a player I was actually kind of hot on, and it was more to do with Elliot Yeo moving out of the midfield. So there was always going to be opportunity there, if that makes sense. Like, he is an intercepting player. We know he's a fantastic kick, taking the kickings. So it was more just about the opportunity being there. And I think they've sort of had players, they've been happy to do more things in the past. So this year I sort of thought with Yeo moving out, it really played into Hearn scoring better. Obviously exceeded expectations, but I thought there was a chance he was going to be better. Maybe not to this degree. Like, yes, Supercoach, he sort of touched these scores before. This is his best year. But Dream Team, yeah, it sort of followed suit. So I can understand someone saying it being an outlier year. But I think next year he actually has a reasonable chance to repeat, to be honest.
Oh, wow. Yeah, wow. I mean, I agree. I think there is a pretty good chance that he can back up. But for me, I basically look at drafting people under 30 almost exclusively. And so for me, it's as far as draft goes, he'll be down my priority order, but I'll understand why someone will take him.
I actually saw a really interesting chart the other day from one of the stat gurus on Twitter, and it showed that, because there's often this thing about players over 30 dropping off, and it showed that if you're an All-Australian level player, you don't actually drop off until you're 32, and even then, you actually, the fall off isn't that bad until you're 34, at which point most of them retire. But if you're an All-Australian caliber player, you generally maintain to some degree.
Yeah, right. Good one.
Interesting. Very interesting. We seem to have lost the Statesman here. We'll see if we can try and get him back, but I'm going to kick on with my first player who slightly overachieved, and that's Callum Sinclair from the Sydney Swans, where it's sort of alter circumstance that he became so popular in 2018. We saw Kurt Tippett retire at the start of the year, and then Sam Naismith, who looked like he was going to be the number one ruckman for the Swans, did his ACL. So that gave career numbers for Sinclair this year, where he averaged 97 and in Supercoach and 92 in fantasy, a jump of 18 in both formats this year. With Sam Naismith coming back next year, I don't see him producing those same numbers again, especially with Sydney needing another tall target in that forward line to help Bud Warner out. I mean, they do have Sam Reid, but he is totally unreliable, and I can see him being used as that second tall and second string ruckman, which he did play that role when he first came to the club 2 years ago. So At 29 years of age, I don't see him backing it up again, especially with Naismith coming back to the team, and a lot of clubs are starting to play that two-ruck system now, which is going to affect the scores, we think, coming forward in the future.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you, Jono. I thought he was a great pick. He was on my shortlist, and I really struggle to see him maintaining. I think, yes, obviously with Naismith, like, unbelievable with the Tippett thing and Naismith doing their ACL. He was really forced into that role and scored fantastically, let's be honest. He really performed. The only guy who really could give him a chop out was Dean Towers. And I mean, you know, fine, but slim pickings at Sydney. I would imagine they'd either need to do something through the trade draft period to shore up at least some sort of split, because Sydney have traditionally had a pretty reasonable ruck forward, whether it was Tippett or Sinclair often rotating together. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think this will be an outlier season, but maybe we should have seen some improvement coming with the fact that he was basically a lone hand.
Yeah, exactly right. And you've got that other ruckman, Darcy Cameron. Cameron Darcy.
Yeah, that's right, because everyone was sort of on him, wasn't it?
Yeah. So he played a couple of games with Tippett as well, so we'll see what happens there. What are your thoughts there, Cam?
Yeah, no, I'd pretty much echo what you guys have said, especially just around the lack of depth in their ruck stocks. And for me, it was really surprising that Darcy Cameron didn't get a shot at all, like, this year. Like, I really was quite big on him, more in the salary cap format at the start of the year, but he just didn't show up. It was bizarre. And for me, I actually think he might, unless they do something in the trade period, we might see another decent year out of him next year.
Big mummy back to the Swans. Statesman, have we got you there, mate?
Certainly have. Obviously, Mr. Statesman found the plug to the computer and found a way to pull it after my intro. So no more bad news about Mrs. Statesman. She's a beautiful young lady who serves the community extremely well, and we should be all grateful that she's living and breathing.
Jesus Christ. Serves the community. I don't know. Fantasy footy coaches are pretty immature people.
Who have you got there for your first player there, Statesman?
Yeah, well, I've got to say this, that I found this task one of the hardest that we do, to be honest. There was quite a few that I felt may have their fortunes changed, but we don't know what happens through the trade period, so we need to wait for that process to go forward before we can look in. So maybe we have some players that become Berman later on. So for my overperformance, the first one is Mr. Ed Curno, who turns 30 next year and only scored his second season, averaging over the ton this season. And this did include a period early in the year where he was part of the top 10 scorers and actually was at one stage peaking in the top 6 scorers for the season. That does leave an imprint in fantasy coaches' minds. There's no doubt about that. So when you're looking at the draft, they're always formulated on what their average was the season before. So he's going to have an average over a ton, and the memory is going to be fresh that he pumped out some pretty decent scores, including one of 160, although that was against the Gold Coast. But still, 160 is 160. It means you've got a ceiling. I suspect he'll be taken much earlier in drafts next year than he did this year, and I think that's when he's going to be proven to be an overperformer. But what should be really the expectations for him is what we saw in the second half of the year when he actually played the role he should do, which is truly a role player in their midfield in the future. So his career average is 84.9 over his 141 games. His third best season average is only 88.1. and his only full season was an average of 79.6. Although recent years have thrown us up some surprises, it would seem unlikely that Ed will be part of their next premiership team. So the club will give the roles to their future midfield talent. Obviously, Cripps would be heading that group. Petrescu, Seaton, Fisher, Dow, Kennedy, O'Brien. And, of course, we've got to put Doherty into that mix as well. They'll lead the charge in the mids. And, of course, we shouldn't forget any extra talent that they might bring along. We know Shield's part of that. But also they've got a number one draft pick heading to a very talented boy in the next month or so. So I'm expecting 18 games, which will be his five-season average, and also an average around the 90 mark. So we're looking at a 11 or 12-point drop is my expectation. So he overperformed due to a few circumstances, including some injuries, but got an opportunity in the first half of the year to have a freed-up role. It didn't happen in the second half of the year. I doubt will happen again.
Yeah, Statesman, I think it's a great pick. It's actually interesting because we floated Ed Curnow on our sleeper show as a potential breakout with the Bryce Gibbs leaving. And I think what happened in the first half of the year, he was getting so much midfield time when Carlton were trying to win games, and sort of in the second half of the year, they understood they had to play the kids and all that sort of thing. And Matt Kennedy had returned to health. I'll just throw out these a couple of numbers because they played the Gold Coast Suns twice. And in the first instance, in round two, I think it was, or three, or whatever it was, attended 66% of the centre bounces. And in the second meeting in round 19 or 20 or whatever it was, 20%. So
wow.
There was a clear shift between the halves. And obviously, if you're not in the middle, it's harder to score for certain players. And Ed Curnow certainly floats to mind. And I think, yeah, people will see the average and just grab him when they can't figure out who they want to draft in round, you know, 8 or 9. And they're probably going to get stung by that one.
Absolutely.
Yep, totally agree. Who have you got there for your second pick? Steve.
Well, I'll just keep talking, shall I? Rory Laird is my second one. I don't know what Statesman's talking about.
Give the audience what they want, mate.
Yeah, I actually thought it was really easy. I could have picked out a whole swag of blokes to talk about this.
Wow.
Luke Bruce also sprung to mind. But Rory Laird is the guy I'll talk about because I wanted to choose a guy at the top of the tree. And so people might think this is a bit of a weird one because we all had Laird very high in our rankings. In the 2018 pre-draft, I had him at number one defender for Dream Team and number two defender for Supercoach, and he actually finished in both of those positions by average. But I thought his range was actually really narrow, being between 95 and 100 in both formats. But he outperformed that and rose to 107 Dream Team and 108 Supercoach. So really pleasant surprise. He absolutely brained it. And it was somewhat of a tale of two halves for Rory Laird. I don't want to over-exaggerate it. But he was on a torrid pace through the first half of the year, basically going with Tom Mitchell for disposal numbers. So he was absolutely flying and, in fact, averaged more than 32 disposals over the year, which is quite unbelievable for a defender. We really don't see numbers like that. His Dream Team splits through the first half of the year, rounds 1 to 11. He was averaging 110 Dream Team. And from round 15 onwards, because he missed two games and had the bye, was averaging 104. So in the first half of the year, he was the Crows were without either Matt Crouch or Rory Sloane for essentially every match. And obviously we know the idea of Brad Crouch missed every single match. But Adelaide's midfield pressure wasn't as good this year. And I want to relay a couple numbers to the people out there. In 2018, they were allowing 52 inside 50s per game, which is about league average. In 2017, they were allowing 41. That's 11 more inside 50s a game. So if you think about it, the team scores a goal about 28% of the time when it goes inside 50. So that's an extra 7 rebound 50s they're going to get. That is quite unbelievable. So we assume that Adelaide are going to retain these players. Well, I couldn't, you know, you couldn't predict Matt Crouch. Maybe you could have predicted that Rory Sloane had missed time and came into the season a bit underdone. That's fine. But one thing I didn't calculate was that Brody Smith's absence. We knew he was going to miss the bulk of the season. And when Rory Laird broke out, it was in the season where Brody Smith got concussed twice, when he decided to headbutt Travis Varko's knee and when he decided to run his head through Nick Riewoldt. It didn't work out either time for Brody Smith, and he had a really bad year, but Rory Laird really came to the forefront. And in the two games Brody Smith played this year, that were two of Rory Laird's worst games. One of those games he was tagged, but he didn't turn up in either of them. And also they did start to develop Wayne Miller in the back half. So I think it's really interesting that Rory Laird did what we thought from a rankings perspective, but actually outperformed what I thought his range would be quite significantly. And I know, Cam, you sort of have this perspective that halfbacks are going to level up and become the new fantasy footy force. We've just seen Rory Laird average 32 disposals a game at 107. I think it's a little bit unsustainable, but I'd be interested to hear what you thought.
Yeah, I kind of thought that this would maybe... So I was big on that halfback role for probably the last 2 years, and I was pretty big on Rory Laird going into this year, but I'm siding with you in regards to 107 being unsustainable. I don't think it's too far off. I think he'll probably go a ton next year, but I agree that his disposals will drop off. The midfield pressure will be piled on, with Rory Sloane being a little bit better cooked, and hopefully Brad Crouch comes back. And so they may not actually see as much ball and as much run off halfback, or it may not be as needed. But that being said, 100 I think is fine for next year. And he's overperformed slightly, I think.
I think the alarming statistic there is the Brody Smith. So Brody Smith played two games. Rory Laird got a 67 and I think it was a 92. It was around that mark. So a 60 and a 90. That's scary. His best season ever is when Brody's been out. Maybe I'm sitting a little bit on the fence here, but I think I'm in between where Steve's at and Cam's at. So I'm thinking more than 90 to 95 is the average, and the potential of him dropping any further, I think is probably unlikely. I think he's too important for them. So he'll still be used as a link-up, but I think... he'll be more hands off to the running Brody Smith type, so a little bit less kicking.
See, I actually think that he's probably still going to be, because even when Brody Smith was in the team the year before, he still scored quite well, and he's got such a massive ceiling that, you know, anyone I think could happily take him as a D1 and just lock away the key. But it's when you take that D1, I guess, that will be, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because I know Statesman sort of has the idea that defenders score better when the defense is better, like the ball's not going down there as much. And I actually think the average kind of plays to that a little bit. Like if the ball wasn't going down there and he averaged 100, the ball was going down there more and he averaged 107. Is that enough? Like, to me, with the extra options, I think it was really interesting doing the mock draft with you guys on the Fantasy Hour. I thought for sure Rory Laird would be the first defender off the board. And Statesman, you took Lachie Whitfield, who was my target in the second round. And Rory Laird went as the second defender. And it's the cat, Johnny. It's the cat.
I just thought you had ghosts. So
the cat just like opened the cupboard. You didn't see it.
Freaking out
a bit with
Ghostbusters. And just, yeah.
Sorry, listeners. my cat is opening the cupboard doors and all that sort of thing on its own. But I think I'll be interested to see in most drafts if he is the first defender off the board. And if he is, I'm really happy taking one of the other... Because I think I'll end up going in with four defenders in the top tier with Whitfield, Lloyd, Doherty and Laird. And I'll probably be very happy to take the last one of that bunch.
you still think Lloyd, I think Lloyd's even overachieved this year.
I think he has, Jono, but it was probably more noticeable in Supercoach this year than Dream Team. He was about 12 points higher.
Yeah, definitely. So,
yeah,
I agree with you. It's 95 to 100 lead and all those defenders. And if any of those can go that close, then definitely D1s for me all day long.
Maybe stay away in salary cap there, Statesman.
Yes.
Who have you got there as your second player there, Cam?
Yes, my second one, he's the oldest first best and fairest winner, and it's Westhoff. Justin Westhoff. So this guy came into the season. He'd been historically playing a little bit of ruck, a little bit of forward, as a big forward at Port. And this year they basically gave him a new role that was a midfielder. He was an outside midfielder, and he'd pinch hit in the ruck. I thought what was really interesting about this, and I was trying to go through the stats and find, you know, where did he actually make up these points? And it was 90% in the tackles that gave him the jump in points from his last year's average. So he went at 83.1 last year, which was his highest for a couple of years. And this year, just for a baseline, he went at 100.4, so a 17-point jump. In AFL fantasy, so massive jump, massive overs. You would have got him relatively cheap in your draft. But the tackle number, so an average of 2 per game increase. That is significant. So that's 8 points just on the back of nothing at all. Otherwise, around kicks, overall disposal number, pretty average. His free fours, as a result of being a midfielder and needing to tackle and be tackled more, went up significantly as well. So he had 0.9 average per game last year. And actually for the 5 years prior, 0.9 was his highest per game. This year he had 2.3 per game. So that right there is, there's your free kick point. There's your points for your kick or your handball straight off the back of that as well. So, for me, I don't think he'll keep that up. So he's 32, be going on 33 next year. And you'd have to think that, as we talked about last show in regards to the Port midfield strategy changing, I think they're going to have to change and rely a little bit more on the blokes who are playing significantly less game time to play a lot more game time so that Westhoff can have more time in his game in the next couple of years in regards to the longevity of his career. Because otherwise he'll wear down quick. By putting in these numbers. That for me, so next year, I don't think he'll maintain. He won't go anywhere near it. He'll probably drop back to 83, 84. And we'll see people like Ollie Wines. Robbie Gray will probably start playing a bit more midfield rather than sitting forward a little bit. And we'll see Sam Pepper, Rockcliffe picking up the slack in the mid and playing more than 70% game time.
Yeah, Westhoff was a candidate for me straight off the bat. You jumped in first and grabbed him in our show doc. And I think you're missing the stat, actually, not to be a jerk about this, but I think you're missing the key stat is his hitouts went up six per game. So he's in the midfield. Like six hitouts, fine, that's 6 points, not a big deal. But if you're in the ruck, you're in the midfield.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he's where his points came from. Now, we couldn't predict heading into the year that Paddy Ryder would break down like an old mule. But the fact that they've re-signed, they've brought across Scott Lysette on a deal that looks like it probably won't be matched, to me just is a massive worry. I think he can maintain, and I think if Pollock leaves, they can use him on a wing, and he'll still be fine. But he'll probably lose. He's someone I'll never draft because I think he's dropped 12 points very easily.
He kind of... So I take your point around the hitouts, and it's totally valid. But the thing that worries me about his scores, or it's really impressive actually when you look at it, but it worries me is that he doesn't find enough ball. So even as a midfielder, he's clocked up an average of 19.7 disposals, right? So it's quite low. And for me, like, if you're looking at a midfielder and you're looking for someone who's going to sustain...
But he's a ruck. He'll be a ruck. He won't be a midfielder. He'll be a ruck. You've got to look at him as a ruck, not a midfielder.
Will he be a ruck forward or just forward?
I think he can be. I think he'll be a ruck forward. I really believe that.
For 8.7 hitouts a game.
He was taking center bounces. Trust, like, he was losing them. Him and Charlie Dixon were in there, and they were losing them.
But if he gets blocked on a wing and his hitouts drop, his marks could come up if they're using him as a good personality link man.
So well, I think that's where the marks.
But,
I think that's where the marks and tackles might offset, because he, like, if you look at it, he still had 20 touches the year before in a similar sort of role.
Yeah, I think it'll offset, but he won't reach those heights.
It's actually his lowest marks. He's always been that half forward roaming player. Like, that's what he does. But you know, you're talking two marks and two possessions, and you go to a fantasy dud.
Yeah,
exactly. Especially,
well, not dud, but you're not bloody F1.
Up in the,
It's the difference between 20 draft picks, basically.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of someone who could have been drafted as an F1 this year with the way he returned in average, my one who semi-overachieved was Tom Hawkins. He averaged the ton in Supercoach this year, averaging 101.88 in AFL Fantasy, 10 up from AFL Fantasy and 15 in Supercoach. Now, the thing with Tom Hawkins, he's always been fine for Supercoach. He's around that 80s mark. Due to the contested ball and being the only tall forward in that 50. But he turned 30 years old this year and had a career year. Now, what worries me about that is you've also got the Cats, who have failed in the finals the last couple of years, just not quite getting over the line with one tall target. But you can put that all to rest now, people, because Cam Saviour, Luke Dalhouse, has been recruited to the Cats, and we're going to see Tommy Hawkins regress, and Luke Dalhouse will become that 90 averaging forward that Cam has said. And always good in the world. But no, I do joke, but the Cats will change it up, whether they do swing Harry Taylor forward or Lachie Henderson forward to help him out. We did see Hawkins average two marks a game more, two possessions as well, so it could be similar to that Westhoff situation, where if he does lose those two marks and two possessions a game, then he will drop back down to fantasy relevance, but not as high as he was this year. Cam, you're all about Luke Dalhouse hype. Is he going to take away from Tommy Hawkins?
No, Jono, no. I just... Tommy Hawkins, for me, though... he added... I watched a lot of Tommy Hawkins this year, and he added a completely new dimension to his game, and he almost modelled it off Buddy, in that he came forward a lot more than he has historically, and he proceeded outside the 50-metre arc a lot. And so I kind of don't see him losing that dimension. It was really good for his game. It was good for the Cats. And him being able to run to a wing and then still have the engine to get back and support in a forward position, I think they'll maintain that next year. I think Dalhouse will add to his score because he's going to be such a rig. But, it's a loose call, but I'm backing it in. And to be fair, I reckon Tommy goes 85 next year.
In fantasy or Supercoach?
We'll go with fantasy, maybe a little bit more in Supercoach.
He is better than the Supercoach. That's where he averages in Supercoach due to the contested possessions. More so the 75 range in fantasy. So
what are you averaging in Supercoach, sorry, Jono?
This year?
Yeah.
101.
Jeez.
Statesman, you got any thoughts on the old man down at the Cats?
No, not at all. Always a big risk with the key position players. I actually thought of one myself, and to be quite honest with you, it depends on the list management and what their role ends up being. I understand why he's such a demanding player when it comes to Supercoach, and key position forwards are.
You know, it's interesting, John, just quickly, because we had Tommy Hawkins moving up the ranks this year with the midfield additions to the Cats. Perhaps danger going forward even took some of the attention off him. But do you think maybe he's just leveled up? Like, even though he's old, like, maybe he's just leveled up. Like, do you think that's a possibility?
It is a possibility. He has gone close to these numbers before, but this was 6 years ago in 2012, where he averaged 95 Supercoach and 84 in Dream Team. So, I don't know, 30-year-old key forwards, worry for me.
I reckon it's just a change in system at the Cats. Like, they're trying to make their forwards less one-dimensional, because Tommy, for maybe the last 4 years, has been frustrating to watch because he just stays in the same spot and gets outmarked and then doesn't get a goal. Mm. And you're like, well, maybe if you try something else, you'll be able to get a mark or at least play an assist to someone else in the forward line.
Is that why they got rid of Menzel and got Dalhouse? Because they're both one-dimensional?
Well, I think it's interesting because we were talking in the show doc during the week, and Statesman brought up Jack Riewoldt. Because obviously he had a really great year this year, but I think if Handsome Tom moves down to Richmond, he could level up as well, like moving, playing out of the forward 50 a bit, getting free. Like, they might switch that up, but more options can sometimes be good.
Interesting. Who have you got there for your last pick, Statesman?
Yeah, look, I must admit I'm a little bit concerned and worried. I am a rate payer, as you guys know, of WA, but I may not be able to enter the state again after this one. And I will say I honestly don't feel comfortable, but there's a couple of reasons for it. So my second player is Elliot Yeo. So our number two averaging defender for 2018. But that was the first time in his seven-year career that he has averaged a ton. And in fact, it was an 8-point PB. So this should be no surprise that it was finally the year he spent most of his time in the midfield. Now, the reason why I think he may be an overperformer when we're talking scoring, not his football ability whatsoever, is firstly, he's going to lose defender status. So no longer is he one of the top three or four in his position. He's got a lot more opposition when we're talking midfield. But now he has actually proven how damaging he is, and the attention will come. Tagged twice this year for 86 during the home and away, and for the grand final, he received attention and only impacted with a 72. And that's Collingwood learning their lessons from the qualifying final, where he just absolutely smashed them that day. So they concentrated and almost stole the premiership by closing down their playmaker. He also did the occasional defensive role himself for good effect. And we know how he can score when he gets those roles. So this year, he was actually put on Patrick Dangerfield against Geelong. He was only freed up in the midfield in the last quarter and scored 30-odd of his points out of his 46 total points for the game because he played a defensive role. So he's always going to be that option. Do you look after a Dustin Martin? Do you look after a Degoe? Do you look after a Patrick Dangerfield? So he can always go into that position as well. It does feel a little bit wrong in saying so, but this could have been a banner year for the former Yo-Yo, and with their midfield stock rising as well, do they just use him as the most flexible player they've got on their list and to fill gaps and holes on a weekly basis? So there's my concern for Elliot Boy.
I will field this one, and I'll say I'm not sure he did overperform, because when I was going back through the You Suck shows, I was doing my top. I went through the top 30 Supercoach, and I had him ranked at number 6 overall. So I don't I don't think he overperformed greatly. And I think the tagging's a concern going forward. But if he got tagged more than 4 times in a year, I'd be concerned. But the thing that gives me really a lot of confidence with Yo going into next year is when Brad Shepherd went down, they really had the option to throw Yo back, and they didn't do that. They kept him in the midfield, and he's a contested animal. I really like that. I don't see any way they move him out of the midfield, so I'm quite bullish on Yo next year. I know he loses the defender status. I know he now... And in our mock draft with the AFL Fantasy Hour I sort of thought, hey, I'll get Yo in round two, not a worry. Our old mate Warney snapped him up at the back end of round one, and I couldn't see a problem with it. Couldn't fault it, to be honest. But now that Gaff, the only pause I have is now Gaff staying there. That I think that just hurts everyone over there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It gives another option to tag though. So you've got Gaff, Shuey, Yo. Where do you go?
But Gaff.
But if they do get Kelly as well,
bye Dom Shee.
Oh, look, I tweeted that today, and, you know, there was a bit of rebuttal,
Does he get forward?
Hey, look, if you want to draft West Coast's seventh best midfielder, then that's fine.
Sticking away from the Eagles midfielders next year, that's for sure.
I think it's quite interesting as well with Gaff. Like, so he will come back, and he's basically never been, he doesn't get attention at all. Like, the guy, he's allowed to run free pretty much every game. And so if he doesn't get the attention, if he's getting the ball to Yo or if Yo is getting the ball to him, then it's going to be good. Like, I'm big on Yo for next year because Gaff is back.
But Gaff never gets tagged.
That's it. So he never gets tagged.
Well, he used to get tagged.
Yeah. But he won't anymore. But I think the quality of ball use coming from Gaff to Yo and then vice versa, oh man, it's going to be good.
Are you suggesting a handcuff situation if you can?
I don't know. I think it's really hard to... I'm not sure any of them are going to be captain options, but no. It's going to be interesting. They're probably all going round two. Just everyone, round two.
All the West Coast team. Speaking of the trade week, which we will be talking about next week's pod, we had the free agency...
Without you, Jono.
2 weeks, listeners.
Yeah, squib.
2 weeks without me. I'm sunning myself up in Hong Kong and enjoying the delights over there. Free agency started and all hell broke loose because reporters actually had to do some work. And we had a few come through over the weekend. We had Luke Dalhouse jump ship to the Cats. Handsome Tom Lynch nominated the Tigers, which was the worst kept secret going around. We mentioned Scotty Lysette is off to Port Adelaide. There is still rumours of Aaron Hall to North Melbourne because he did pop up in a North Melbourne video on their website before he even said he was leaving. As we said, Gaff and Conker to Freo. What are your thoughts on that one? Because I've been thinking about it. It does pose a few scenarios. I mean, does Conker get put in the midfield? Does Blakely in the midfield and take that role? Conker take that role? It's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Jono. It's very interesting, and I know there's been a lot of scuttlebutt about Lachie Neale moving to Brisbane. I think that would be the most significant move of trade period if Lachie Neale did move. Conker, does he have the defender status going into next year? Because if he doesn't have the defender status, then my interest is down the toilet, because he has played some midfield this year.
That's true.
So that'll be really interesting to see. But it seems hard to imagine that if Neale left, Fremantle wouldn't just go, you know what, we're rebuilding. Let's just give Chera and Brayshaw all the time in the world. Mundy still plays a hell of a lot of midfield time. I charted a Fremantle game on the weekend where Mundy was in 90% of the centre bounces. So I don't think he's going anywhere.
So for me, I think the only thing that... the only thing that will be impacted by Conker going to Fremantle, or the only thing that will be affected, is the amount of beds available at the Fremantle Hospital. Because the guy just cannot stay on the park.
So it's the Harley Bunnell, Reece Conker ward down at Freo Hospital, is it?
With Sandy. Sandy's on standby.
Well, the other interesting one was, I don't know, this is completely, I love social media, that someone put up, and I'm pretty sure it's a joke, that Pollock only signed with North Melbourne because Gaff was going there. Big oops. I don't know if you guys saw that one.
Didn't see that, but I will say the Scott Lysette deal is significant. I'm not drafting Paddy Ryder anywhere next year.
No.
That is massive worry, and I think it plays into the Westhoff thing that we were talking about before.
Yeah, certainly does. And we're going to be keeping abreast of all the trade news throughout the next couple of weeks, minus me. So, yes, Cam.
Oh, just one final trade news. I don't know if I should throw out a Stremplin to reporters because, you know, they do their best with the information that they're given. But a minor Stremplin to whoever tagged the Brad Crouch to Richmond thing and ran with it. There was a Twitter account that was set up to spread fake news. And
oh, that was great.
It was the best. I can't believe how
Stuart McClure ran with it.
Yeah, very good. So a minor Stremplin courtesy because he's in the media, but he will cop a major Stremplin if it happens again.
Well, that's all what the media do anyway. They just read big footy and social media and throw as much crap on the wall and see what sticks. But that wraps up the show for this week. You won't hear me for the next 2 weeks, so I'm sure our ratings are going to go through the roof. Enjoy trade week for the next couple of weeks, and I'll see you in a fortnight.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.